stop at 30 bucks when you kick off. I just bored with apologies. I just want to offer out my thanks to the director of Hale, Marie, John, Andy, and Tracy for all the help and direction throughout the year. It's been a pleasure working with them. And this will be finally. Before we go into, I also want to welcome back all the guests. We have a presentation for a moment. So I just want to go into the action team part. So, any apologies? No apologies? Okay, moving on to item two, declarations of interest. Any declarations of interest?
No,
sir. Okay. Item three, the ERB action sheet from the 16th of April. And we'll just go through this page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Any matters arising, or can I get a proposal and second for the action sheet? Opposed, Councillor Horan. Second, Councillor Harry. Okay, now I'm going to hand over to all the guests for the presentation and we can answer questions and answers. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Chair. I just want to take you through a quick presentation today from some of the recent outlook or forecast that the Economic Policy Centre in New York over the winter, and take you through a little bit of what we think. We would first of all, what we think the shape of the recovery has been here locally, and then following on from that, what we think the future might hold, given the shape of that recovery. I suppose when you're kind of looking into the future, it's probably as well, we would also try and follow the advice of Tegan Whitaker, one of our own locals here, would have said in the past, when he would say to think ahead, the main needs to support the facts and figures. So I'm going to try and take you through a few of the facts and figures today about, as I say, what the future may hold. In terms of the kind of forces, if you like, that are key to the economy in the North, the kind of the shape of the global economy is one. Local growth in here, both in the UK and Ireland, would be a second. And then in around sort of consumer confidence and the confidence or local firms, those would be the three things. And I suppose at the moment, if you're looking at the global economy, it's probably the first time since the crash back in 2007 that the three big economies, the US, the EU, and China, are all growing at the one time. So that's a positive there. There are obviously some uncertainty around that into this year and next year, but at the moment things are more positive than negative globally. There has been growth, there's still growth both closer to home in the UK and Ireland, but a slowdown in that, which is probably something to watch, both in the Republic of Ireland and in the UK as well. And the third thing, I suppose, which impacts a lot on our local firms here, are both the scale of cross-border trade and trade more generally, and then the scale of kind of household finances, and the impact perhaps on both of those of Brexit, both in terms of current uncertainty, and then what the shape of the Brexit deal might be. So those are kind of your forces. In terms of how the recovery has gone, just moving to that quickly, it's been a job-rich recovery across the islands. You can see from those from the charts there that both the Republic and the North are now back to pretty much where they were in 2007-8, whereas the UK has kind of moved ahead. In all three economies, the recovery has been full of jobs. There's some question marks over the quality of those jobs, over the wages in them. There's also question marks over whether they're predominantly part-time or full-time. But in terms of people in employment, we're back to pretty much where we were. When you look within the North, most sectors have grown. Number of sectors at the bottom there are in negative territory from 2012 to 17, the recovery period. About 74,000 new jobs added on since 2012-13, and that's an important figure to bear in mind, that 70,000-ish. You can see a lot of those in manufacturing and services, restaurants and hotels. That's been predominantly in Belfast, but also in other areas too, across the coast as well. One thing I suppose just to note there is that the dark blue lines show you where the public sector has been. A lot of public sector job loss in civil service, some added on health and education, where there's been ring fencing there, but predominantly this has been a recovery driven by the private sector. Locally, this is the state of the local labour market as at the most current figures. in Kansas City, is our the population here locally about 10% of the North population generally. A good size of that population in the sort of 0-15 category, so a young population here locally. Employment rates are pretty much the same as it would be for the population generally. Unemployment's lower at the moment, and it's patchy across the council, some areas better than others. And activity rate a little bit lower than the Northern Ireland average, too, but again, patchy. And you can kind of see there as well, the wages are not a bit behind the Northern Ireland average, certainly behind Belfast, but on a par with most places. So, in terms of where the recovery's coming in Uri and Moan, you see by the kind of sectors that have grown. Manufacturing has added on just the last 5 years. Accommodation or tourism have added on good numbers there as well. Construction's seen a bit of a turn back too, and a little bit of services growth. Similar story again there, health has added on a few, but education and the civil service generally have lost jobs. So right about, you can see the figure at the bottom, about 4,500 jobs added in the recovery after 4,000 lost in the crash. One thing probably to bear in mind in this is that this probably doesn't cover some people who maybe left the area either to go back to different parts of Europe, maybe migrants who have moved away, but by and large we're going to see as many jobs added in the recovery as were lost. But one requirement is that it was MERS, then the Northern Ireland average and the trend there as well, so you can see that actually Uri and Moan down for the first time in a long time has gone ahead of average there in the last couple of years, so that's a good story. Much of this is driven by the fact of businesses locally. We have a very good business base here locally, high level of numbers of VAT registered businesses in the council area, much higher. It's up around the far left there, as you're looking around from Annan, Mid Ulster, and Uri Moan and Downville towards the top end of that. And what we would call churn, we're getting high numbers of births, lower numbers of deaths, and as a percentage of the business base, there's a good churn rate, but not too high, which is probably just about where you want it. GBA, then, one other thing just to sort of say here, patchy here, and I'll come back to this point, the recovery has been patchy in terms of post value added in there. So, in terms of the future, then, what the future might hold, one thing just to say, because of the uncertainty, we have three scenarios here, with an upper, a lower, and a baseline. In all three, you're going to see growth in the lower one, which we would work on the basis of that being a very bad Brexit, just about recovering in 10 years' time, that's where we are now, so it's kind of going back quite significantly over the last next couple of years, and then coming back. The baseline, the blue one, is the one we expect to see most of them, and in that, you're talking in around sort of another 3,000 additional jobs, less than the recovery period, it has to be said too. In the upper scenario, you're having about 7,000 jobs, and this is the kind of growth year on year that you'd likely see. The dotted green line is the upper scenario, the purple bars being the baseline one. We would reckon a steady increase as opposed to spectacular one. If you look at the kind of couple of bars behind, or the last couple of blue lines there, you can see what strong growth has been in terms of employment. This is much more steady or moderate growth over the next 10 years. And in general, I mentioned at the start that the North had added on about 70,000 jobs in the last 5 years. In general, the North is looking down on about another 34,000 so over the next 10 years. So you're looking at a very slower growth over the next period than we've seen in the recent past. Where you might see the jobs growing here in terms of the baseline would be, again, tourism and manufacturing, but in retail there as well. I suppose what you're looking to try and see in terms of the kind of better paid jobs or more coming in the likes of the professional scientific services, ICT and that. So there's some there, but perhaps you'd like to see a bit more in those couple of areas there. A little bit more in healthcare there, and construction has been showing a bit of a positive bounce as well. So doing not too bad there, I suppose. A couple of sectors at the bottom, agriculture, shedding jobs, and I can come back to that in questions if people want to look at that. GBA, then, And we were better than knowing our average over the next weather we expect, but not great. I mean, if you're looking at 1.5, 1.6%, you're not shooting for the stars in terms of getting it. Productivity will remain quite low. So those are the, I suppose those are the sort of the figures, and then really you're looking then to sort of say, well, what issues might the council consider? Automation is going to be one. We've done a bit of research on this within the centre, and this is when we expect to see quite significant impact over the next decade, right across sectors. I suppose, if you thought 10 years ago you would be driving into a number of petrol stations where you were just paying at the pump as opposed to going in to actually pay somebody inside a booth or inside a shop, that's one change you begin to see. But going to any of the manufacturing, the leading manufacturing firms now, and see the change within those firms, it's be well worth a visit in terms of people actually just to see how much automation is changing things, both in terms of the kind of productivity it can bring, but also, I suppose, some of the job functions that are then at risk and perhaps even jobs themselves. So I think that's an issue maybe to bear in mind in terms of how employment might change over the next 10 years. Raising all around the productivity issue, one of the things I think to think about here locally is our skills base still needs looking at, I think, locally here. We tend to have very good skills, we tend to have very good educational qualifications within the council area, but a lot of those people are then commuting out for work. So retention of some of the best and the brightest in terms of having employment here to retain them is an issue. Inactivity is another issue there. I was saying about one in five people are inactive at the moment within the council area, and that is that's an issue right across the north. It has to be said how to deal with that. Many of those people say that they would like to work if employment is available there for them, so it's dealing with that. But I would say that an awful lot of that comes down to how do you bring people close to the labour market that maybe have been out of the labour market for a long time. May not be putting people directly into work, making people more employable and feeling that that's a role that they can play within the labour market. Brexit's obviously there as an issue to consider for yourselves or for any of the councils in the north and the south for that matter. And then the role of city deans, what that might play in terms of sort of around the productivity and skills improvement as well. Inflation. I think that was more of a worry maybe over the winter than it is now. It seems to be sort of being hit on the head as a major worry. But the Bank of England would say that there may be possibilities of raising interest rates over the next 6 months to 12 months again. So I suppose that's one to bear in mind. And that's basically where we're at. I suppose just to kind of sum it up, you're talking about a recovery that's been quite strong across the North and in this council area as well, followed by next 10 years of fairly moderate growth, and maybe seeing are there any things that can be done to sort of boost that up. A very good business base, so I suppose is there more that can kind of draw out of that. Thanks very much.
Well, thanks, Alan. And just for the withdrawal of questions, I completely agree with the retention of the skills base, and I suppose this is why we spoke at length at the lab, the early meeting on the skills fall and how important it is. All members have agreed to stop people commuting outside the district. And if we can match up people in the students and the students with the businesses that's out there, I think it's key going forward, so I can particularly agree on that. Davey, you want in?
Hi, thanks, sir. Thanks all for that.
Davey, come on. Thank you so much. Just get on call.
Some of the stuff that I found for this area was that, yeah, it looked great that we had unemployment down to very low levels compared to what historically might have been the case. But there are so many people economically inactive for whatever reason, and included amongst that is obviously the long-term unemployed who just haven't worked, don't even know the meaning of that, unfortunately, for many, many years. I just, one concern is that, and then when I look at, I just got involved in the construction business in the south of Ireland. He's on right now, being heavily involved in building these, what he calls million pound houses. I think that's, some of that was what happened at the lab. economic meltdown with the hub, particularly in the South Barn, where things went pear-shaped. I'd just be a bit concerned that that scenario is raising the double head again. The rates of pay of some people are getting it. I don't know how. And they're getting really very, very, very good levels of pay, but maybe not. Maybe pay is over a little bit more, to be honest. And something that maybe that greed aspect, or whatever you want to call it, it led into the big economic U-turn the last time, and I'd just be concerned something similar to that might be going to affect. Because I think north or south, the whole of this island will be touched by these issues, as you mentioned, Brexit, and how the impact of it is going to have on all of us.
Thanks very much for
the
presentation. Thanks, David.
Do you
want to imagine?
Yeah, no, I think the point on construction isn't important. To bear in mind, I think the council area here would still have a higher kind of concentration of people working in construction than in other sectors. So, kind of how construction is going, and particularly a lot of those people are actually working in the south or across in England with some of the local firms here. So how construction is going generally is a key factor. My own feeling on that is that an awful lot of it is probably going now in a sort of private sector or private investment as opposed to infrastructure investment. Now I think the new National Development Plan in the south that may take care of some of that. But I would worry here locally, we're not doing enough, I think, to invest in infrastructure. I don't mean just in the council area here, I'm not talking about that, but I think if they cross the north. And we have difficulties then, I think, because a lot of firms are operating outside the local economy then of actually bringing people back. Plus, the levels that people can be paid elsewhere to actually bring people back in then to facilitate some of that infrastructure development is I think, going to be a difficulty, and that may cause us problems down the road, I'd be worried about that.
Yeah, Councillor McAteel is the next, and then I'll take Councillor Casey and Councillor Harris. So, numbers on the top, but I have a list of this, the order of them. Yeah, Councillor McAteel.
Yes, thank you, everyone, for the presentation again. I was interested in one particular aspect. There was the agricultural jobs, quite a fall, and I was just trying to figure out what you had. Figured out what the way was that going to happen, what was the main cause of it. And the other thing, just again, just from the manufacturer, you know, you hear different conflicting reports, what we do in papers in terms of, you know, production, manufacturing output. They're saying that it's quite down, it's well down, so I wonder how does that matter in some of the things you'll be showing us out today, you know.
I think when you take the agriculture one first and come back to manufacturing, agriculture, I kind of took a good look at over the last 6 months just to see what the prospects are there. And one of the big factors that seem to be changing, that we've seen the long term restructuring in agriculture here in terms of family farms going more part time, people moving from full time farming into more part time farming. And I think what we are starting to see is that even the part-time farming is beginning to move. People are moving out of that. So in a sense, some of those jobs are already part-time, and people are starting to move out of that, or find that unsustainable in itself. One of the interesting, I suppose, consequences of that is the case, and we're right on that, is what then happens in terms of the land that's there that people are using when they rent that out, you know, in the case of they sell that, and what that might mean for land, agricultural land prices or the agricultural land market. But our feeling is that it's almost like a shakeout that is happening, that is moving full time to part time, and numbers of people are now moving out of the part time thing for lifestyle reasons or you know, just moving further and further away from that being a source of income. It's not particularly sustainable as a source of income for a lot of people as well. And a number of the other factor I think in that person right here is that we're in the uncertainty over what an agriculture policy might look like after the cap disappears. So some people are already beginning maybe to make those decisions, and over the next 10 years we'll start to work with their feet out of having that as a source of employment. So that's kind of our theme on agriculture right across it isn't just this council or the Red Cross. No, in terms of manufacturing, I'd be fairly upbeat about that. Manufacturing tends to kind of ebb and flow. You know, you have good 6 months or good quarters and bad quarters, but in general, a lot of manufacturing plants we have here locally as well as in other parts in the north. There's a couple of areas where there are turned to black spot, but in most parts, the manufacturing firms are very profitable, operating well, have good established export markets, and tend to say this, you'll be heavily investing as well for the future. So I would tend to be fairly optimistic about those prospects and the prospects for that sector.
Just go back to agricultural one again. I mean, the agricultural manufacturing has been consistently increasing. So while there may be less jobs, that's why it's interesting that because that's quite a part of the agricultural aspect, which is so all sorts of shapes up. We don't know, but then you know, the sort of the supply and the supply of sort of the manufacturing plants
is
coming on the question. So, but given that. There is still a strong, at the end of the day, a strong market out there for agricultural produce coming from here. But I just was interested in that you had worked it out that there were less people involved in agriculture, but maybe manufacturing in that sector would
yeah.
be sustained, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I make a distinction. There's a kind of, when we talk about agriculture as the primary, the farm, you know, inside the farm gate would be what we refer to as agriculture, and then the agri-foods would fall in under manufacturing. And I think, yeah, you're right. One would be more buoyant than the other.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
Well, thanks, Chair. Excellent presentation. You know, we haven't got that in our tax. Can you send to us? What's it sent to us?
Yeah, certainly. We'll arrange that to send to all
hands. Something made me chuckle. There was a higher birth rate than the lower mortality rate. It shows that we over 70 are not going away, you know. I think I'm fortunate enough to be in some sort of gainful employment at the moment, but there is a lack of meaningful employment right across all the sectors. And you see the only growth is maybe manufacturing and hospitality and that. And some of the projections were for financial increasing jobs, and you're right, the highly skilled are going away. But I was at an event in the Canal Court not too long ago where first residents had some 400 to 500 plus jobs on offer. And which is very encouraging, he has lowered the bar slightly, which is good. And the man has not said how many have decided to keep his major business in this area, which you know is acting as well. And David, I don't know if David won't correct me, but the long term unemployed, that's not that their fault that they're
no.
long term unemployed. It's just the jobs aren't there, and poor response with the slash dynamics. The rest are getting richer and poorer and getting poorer. One of the biggest ones in Brexit, what is, can you project anything, the impact from Brexit? I know you haven't got a magic wand or a crystal ball or one, but you know, you've been at this game quite some time, there has maybe some sort of indication.
Well, if I wouldn't, I was going to say if I was a betting man, I certainly wouldn't be betting on Brexit, but or what the outcome of Brexit might be, but if it was to, I think, looking at it now, the current moment in time, I think certainly within the UK government, the desires there, if they can agree among themselves, the desires there are certainly within a strong cohort there to stay as close as possible. The battle really in our current PSA is between those who really want to have the freedom to do whatever the hell they want to do after Brexit in terms of policy, and those who want to stay as close as possible to the EU. I think this second group maybe the one that wins out on this. Now, I don't believe that they'll stay within the single market, but I think they'll come to some sort of a customs partnership agreement which mirrors that pretty closely in terms of, you know, alignment and regulatory alignment. But the big difficulty, as I see it, is not the shape of Brexit on day one, it's how quickly or how slowly they move away. It's almost that decoupling point about, you know, the two of them are gathered or joined at the hip at the moment. But if they start to move away, what does that then mean for, say, agri-food firms and the likes of that, if there's any of that regulatory divergence? And that I think, is where the battle's going to be, is how far people want to move away from the norm as is at the moment, or the status quo. Your other point there about the kind of the financial services and ICT, when you look at at other firms like First Derivatives or Sports Stats and some of the local firms here, the interesting thing about them is they're tougher for, I think, for a vote of confidence into the area that they can recruit staff here. I mean, First Derivatives are certainly talking about the potential for modern using modern apprenticeships to recruit directly from the local schools, which I think is an absolutely brilliant move, to be honest.
Charlie,
can I just remind you to call your mic for the sake of the audio recording?
There's 4,000 jobs last year in recession, and there's been 4,300 of recovery, and the projection by 2027 is a further 3,300. In all sectors? Is that in all sectors?
Across all, yeah.
Thanks very much.
Sure, can I just correct Charlie, or one point, small point? Sorry, Brian. I wasn't attacking the long term. But what I'm saying is that some of the long term unemployed have been so long unemployed is that they've aged and then become long term inactive or long term ill. No longer are classified as unemployed because they have the suffered back and off. I mean, I wouldn't want to be attacking the long term unemployed.
Thank you all for your presentation. And just on the figures and particularly the rural areas, we still have an awful lot of young people emigrating, you know, especially the trades and that, like, you know, massive one in our own areas in America, like all great trades people moving out, you know. So I'd say that there's something on the figures. But certainly on the buildings, Owen, particularly around this entire area here, there's very few looks to the north from mine, but it's all Dublin based, it's all Southern based, it's all where the money is, and that's what the one establishment is coming from Belfast, heading to Dublin, on a daily basis, Davey talks about the wages in Dublin, the class of wages and that there is. But there's a balance there. It's underpaid in the north, and that's why it's really people would actually be really out of work from the block to go off in the construction industry if that's actually paid. And there is that serious rise in the south. But you have to remember, it's highly paid, but it's limited. 50, 55 years of age, you're building blocks up of non-class. So, you know, your business is number after you don't have any thought of health. Two, and the agriculture thing, there was a great investment in the dairy sector. There's a lot of people investing all the money into the dairy and perhaps the very expensive milking parish and all of that now. But they can't get, if you look at the southern papers they can't get the workers now because of the buildings. And a lot of them is crippled with work now because they can't pay the sort of rates that the people is getting on the buildings. So that actually it has an awful lot on the harvest and the sales contractors, all of those. The way the business has gone now can't recruit staff and struggle very badly in that sector.
I think you're again agreeing to argue with that. I think one of the big issues I think for us locally here, and particularly for a lot of council areas which have would be, you know, in the main rural, if you like, a couple of towns in it, but by and large rural, is the kind of absence of trades in the probably 20 to 35 age group. I think in particular in that age group, I spoke to somebody recently and they were saying that outside the big firms, if you like, they don't have the same difficulty, but they're still doing most of their work either in Dublin or in the south of England or some in Scotland. They wouldn't have seen difficulty recruiting, not because they have a pick off that, but in terms of people with smaller builders with two or three people working for them, actually recruiting anybody. If you look at the age profile of people who are in that trade now, you're looking at into the 40s generally. So there is an issue there, and I suppose going back to the answer I gave earlier around the kind of the construction prospect, I would worry there about that gap in terms of what we're investing in infrastructure or what we're investing in housing here. If there isn't work there for people may be employed in construction, but they're doing it somewhere else. So I think that's a very good point. And it would have a knock-on effect in other sectors where people maybe did a bit of construction at one part of the year and other sources of employment at another. It has a knock-on effect there too.
Good. Brian, do you also check right out you down the list?
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for your presentation. I've been very interesting. I'm quite optimistic on all of the things you can choose. So just a couple of concerns there that I know have been raised today, especially around Kentucky. You see the foreign labour, pretty much at the moment, what's been noticed, there is no new foreign labour that's coming in. There's Kentucky, there are more now, which would be fairly reliant on it to a certain extent in the present. Just on foreign labour, you see the Europeans that's here at the moment. Is there really any sort of indication whether they have decided to remain? I know at the moment there is quite a few of them still there, and some of them have put down roots and some of them haven't. Is there any indication there that they will be staying? And just on a slightly different matter, international labour. I know next week there's a major meeting, so there is over in Westminster, so there is. You know, it's pretty much at the moment it's concerned the consumers of the Filipinos and that there, so there is. And what will happen to them. Would you not sort of agree that, fair enough, if we're not in Europe, I don't think that another market of skills that are coming from international parts of the world too. The other thing I would like to point out to you as well, I know speaking to some of the larger companies that actually do deal internationally, at best, I would say they're only slightly concerned with Brexit. They're only slightly concerned about Brexit because, in their words, they are dealing internationally. And actually, it probably will open up a lot more markets. If one big company can feel that it's actually indicated to me, they're looking really forward to it. So they are. So there is wins, a lot of wins, and there will be some disadvantages to that. All I'm listening to here at the moment is disadvantages, but there is a lot of win-wins in this. The other thing, just on the border, the north-south border, it's important to get the east-west right as well as it is from the Republic of Ireland to the United Kingdom, because there's a lot of trade goes back and forth as well. Just to give you an example, the new trade deal that was negotiated between Canada and the EU, I know it took a long time. That trade deal is only possibly up to 1% of the products that come into the United Kingdom. It's actually monitored, so it is. A lot of it is actually done on trust to a certain extent, but deals with companies, and you know, they take responsibilities for a lot of that. At the moment, I believe that Europe's playing really hard balls there. So I think it will sort itself out. I think there will be some sort of border controls, but it'll be absolutely minimal. So, thanks.
Thanks, President Hannah. I'll try and come to each of them in their turn. In terms of the migrant labour, there's two almost contrary trends I think happening there. On the one hand, if you look, somebody asked us to take a look at this, the school enrollment numbers there for people who are kind of from non-local parents, if you like, and those school enrollments stay pretty much the same as they are. So those, you know, your point there is you make about people setting down roots is crucial. I don't see those people, and there's no evidence that those people are leaving in any great numbers. Those who haven't set down roots, you hear anecdotal evidence that one of the factors that has changed for people is that a lot of people were sending home what you might call remittances back into the euro zone, and with the depreciation of sterling, that became a factor then for people actually staying here. You know, well, you weren't being able to send as much home, so you've seen some people moving not too far away actually, in some sense, because we're kind of close to the border. So migrant labour, I think, is an issue. There's an issue there with the uncertainty around what the future might hold. I can kind of see at the moment why there would be a sort of slowdown of numbers of non-local or of migrants coming in. How that might shake out, who knows? If you look at the balance between EU and non-EU labour, if you want to look at it that way, it's around about, at the moment, across the north, it's around about sort of 80-20, 80 being the EU, 20 being the non-EU. So I suppose there's a fair bit of a gap to make up if you like one to stop coming for by the other. Brexit then, well, Brexit as it always is the case, a lot of these things tend to depend on the perspective, and I think not only the political perspective, but the perspective of the business. I think you're right. I think if you're a large firm and you kind of have the capability of dealing with Brexit, Brexit doesn't pose as much of an issue to you. And I think that's also true if you look at the Canadian deal. If you look at the Canadian quality or the style of the export and that's been coming from Canada to the EU, it was from large multinational companies generally. So there would have been a lot of those companies would have been known as trusted traders or AEOs, or so they would have held under a different regime. Our difficulty here, not wanting to make a political point about it, but our difficulty here is the number of small firms that do business into the EU or cross border, and that poses a different challenge for us here, both North, South and East, West, it has to be said, because the companies being smaller, they don't have the same capacity to make some of the changes that need to be made, nor are they likely ever to become trusted traders or AEOs that can fall into that 1% change. So I take the point you're making, but I think it depends on the scale of the companies involved.
Billy?
Thanks, sir. I don't know if you know. Okay. Thanks very much for the presentation. I suppose the Brexit issue is a major, it's been well around today. But it's sort of ironic that the Brexiteers are, you know, talking about that they want to keep migrant workers when initially that's the reason they want to leave the European Union, couldn't control their borders and migrant workers coming in. You know, so it's ironic that they're calling for them to be allowed in. So I think that's slightly bizarre. But in regards to mainland Europe workers and not coming to the north, I think that there's a major gap in both of the construction industry as well. Because a lot of migrant workers, they were actually filling that void that has been talked about, that people working down in Dublin. There's a lot of, you know, European workers now taking up that way. There is a real need to start training more apprenticeships in construction. Everybody's in agreement that if you ever try to get a trade first, it's quite difficult to get an electrician or a plumber. I suppose that's the same cost as well for the consumers. We'll leave that, but it's just in regards to automation and agri-food and manufacturing, and the impact on job losses. It's very difficult to prepare for that, you know. But what opportunities does it present? Automation present? Is there any opportunities that we need to start skilling people up to start developing machinery in or around automation? Because I suppose you can't get away from it. You know, it's here, and we have to live with it. But I'm just thinking of, you know, that skills base, you know, for developing automation machinery and stuff. In regards to the construction industry, again, a lot of firms are moving down south. And I know lots of fellas are traveling down right now, spending travel more, so that's from my area, making good money. But there's a price to pay in the family life there as well. You know, I'm sure they'd rather be staying at home with their families and stuff. But I think that's a crucial thing to get local construction business in our council area, and that's why you need a good streamlined planning system where you get the quick turnover of planning applications to support your local construction base. And we're just carrying out a review currently in regards to how we streamline that and get quicker turnaround times, because I think that's crucial for
our
council.
Yeah, no, just quickly on the, I suppose, the question in regard to automation on the skills gaps. I think in terms of the opportunities that might be there, the two areas that people see the opportunities in are on the one side, kind of the ICT side of things and that kind of software development, that area. And the other area then is in around the actual machinery that can be made for, we call them out on that here locally a little bit, but there still would be some, if you look at the Mid Ulster area and the kind of engineering there, they're kind of believing and seeing big opportunities to be made there in terms of what might come down the track in automation. Generally with automation, what you're generally seeing there is a firm dislocation out of that initially, and then over time the hope would be that you know, other jobs are created in other ways. My main concern around automation is not only the kind of jobs, short-term jobs impact of that, but the longer-term impact of automation in recent decades and in terms of kind of technology and so on has been the kind of growing inequality that brings you a bit of a monopoly. Who can go with those who can, you know, who are kind of operating at the sort of IT or ICT level in terms of some of the big companies there, and it can add to further inequality within society. So I would worry in that area too, as much as the kind of jobs impact.
Thanks.
Final,
Brian,
that's
the one.
Thank you, Chair. Again, thank you very much for the presentation. A lot of what it was told us was very interesting, but sometimes don't just measure up with what is happening on the ground. I was very interested to hear on television online some of the comments from Brexit, where some of the Dublin-based companies are buying up or leasing premises in Belfast in preparation for Brexit. Well, the leak problem over the top of our country, and where we're placed at the Northern border, with an access to the two airports, plus the warm pine dubs, it doesn't seem to line up with good practice to ignore the Newry Moor and Down Council. So there has to be something maybe done to make us a more viable option for these companies, instead of just taking the big jump in the Belfast. I sometimes just personally make that link to what has been going on for years. There is a drip out of our country into Belfast for civil service jobs, health service jobs, all those type of, you know, civil service and long-term employment options. I'm just wondering, has any of your findings pointed that is the direction of flow, and there's anything we can do about it?
I think just before you answer that, I think we should put on record how proactive this committee has been and its members of this committee in setting up the Brexit Forum, which is a subcommittee office. And I know the meeting that's coming up in the next couple of weeks will be businesses in Dublin in order to tackle that, to get businesses to relocate in this area. So just for the record, how proactive this committee has been in that exact issue.
Yeah. I think you look at the kind of strategies that businesses will take, it'll vary from sector to sector. I think some of the announcements, or at least the talk of announcements that have been made, are very much in the services end of things, that they're looking to kind of, as you said, sort of leapfrog Newry to move on to Belfast. And there may be a natural fit in terms of some of the other firms that are there, and there may be a natural fit there in terms of some of the accommodation that's available to them. It's hard to know, you know, unless you're kind of in those boardrooms where the decisions are being made. Today, this particular offering that Newry Moor and Down can make in terms of some of the sectors there, if there are other firms here where people can see that there's a labour force that has worked in one particular sector, there's good expertise there. So I think in that way, I think as much as the kind of access to the motorway or access to the ports and airports, your general point though about Belfast over the last 20 years, so the last 15 years anyway, has, you know, become the real concentration in terms of kind of not so much of jobs and people coming to live in the city, but much more heavily commuting drain or draw for people in and around the surrounding areas. And our view on that, the forecast for the next 10 years, is that that's not likely to reverse. The problem I think for Belfast will be a little bit like Dublin in terms of the overheating there, not in terms of house prices, but in terms of actual access to the city itself. You know, if you go, I travel a few days a week, you know, and I would go on the bus, you know, I wouldn't take it into my head to drive to Belfast early in the morning. Now, because you're sitting more or less, maybe sitting in the car park and in the M1 on Spruce Street. So, in a sense, you know, that is the, I think, the threat to Belfast, and that's the opportunity for other areas in terms of the problem of actually getting into the city at all. So I think their strategy seems to be more residents in the city, but Belfast has never been that attractive, as that hasn't been as attractive a place to live as it has been to commute into. Unless that changes, I think, you know, there could be a threat to Belfast growth, and maybe an opportunity for other council areas around that.
Thanks,
Owen.
And finally, Michael.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thanks, Owen, for a very good presentation. Certainly thought provoking, and I do think that we need to take a sort of rain check every so often. It's good for this committee. You posed the question there, should we worry about inflationary pressures? And it sort of just touched for me as I put some paper in the camera the other day and saw the price had gone up to 127, I think it was. Well, it's probably within the past year that I remember floating below, just below a pound and above a pound. So that's quite a hike over the course of the past number of 12 months, whatever. And the effect the likes of Sainsbury's and buying out the house and so on, what that can have. How much should we be looking at the inflationary pressures that are going on at the moment, you know? There's also a thought there too, if we do pull out with Brexit and all the rest, how does that affect oil prices and so on? Oh, if we get it at the American rate, you know.
I think the inflationary pressure, if you look at it, it means two things. I think one is the depreciation of sterling, so anything we're buying in either, you know, buying from the dollar or buying from the euro zone, or that is priced in either dollars or euros, like oil, we then start to run into pressures on that, and you can see that in not only the petrol you put in your car, but the kerosene for home heating oil and so on. Over the last winter, it went up quite significantly. I think we're at about 15% or so. So there have been pressures there. The other thing in around sort of retail prices, I suppose, is one, you know, in terms of the shops, is one to watch over the next 6 months. I did a talk about 2 months ago, and to some of the big retailers, and they were saying that they actually had hedged out. A lot of their currency hedge came to an end this summer, so in a sense that they're going to reset what their currency is, hedges, then you might start to see some of that savings that they've made or holding on to the prices that they've set, and some of that may well change over the next 6 months. So it's not even maybe the acquisition of Asda by Sainsbury's, but actually some of that currency hedging coming to an end might have an impact too in terms of retail prices. The reason I think we're feeling it, though, to go back, and I'll probably go back to the point that I made at the start, saying around the recovery, one of the things to bear in mind here, if we looked at the average, if you looked at the average wage 10 years ago, it's in the around about 25,500 here in the council area per annum. Locally here, if you look at that 10 years ago, it wouldn't be much different. So we've had a very, very minimal movement in wages. When we had low inflation, that perhaps doesn't matter as much, but if we move into an area of higher interest rates and higher inflation, then that starts to bite quite badly, I think. So that's one to watch.
Just one
more
question.
Yep.
Just on the brand shops, have you noticed in the last number of years there's more people choosing the gender balance of like, as well as dark house, like plumbing, electrician, and that type of thing? Is there any more of a take? Because there was a time that everybody was sort of steered towards better education.
All right. What we're seeing and looking at the figures are that a lot more of the businesses are actually in non traditional areas are taking on apprenticeships. I can do a modern apprenticeship in accountancy and things like that. So they're all, if you like, what I would call non-traditional apprenticeships, have But our typically on the trades side of that is outside the big businesses, we don't see as many sort of smaller firms taking on apprentices, and I think that's where the difficulty is. Possibly because of the volatility of the work pipeline for some of those firms.
Do you think it has something to do with their employers seem to be getting more responsibility put onto them for everything now? So younger people are living to be better paid. Because I know in my particular paid there, I think it takes about a year, 18 months before they're actually producing any significant income at all for you. Would that be a problem?
Well, it's an issue there, I'd say, for smaller employers. There's no question that, and it's an issue for employers in some sectors. The question of the apprenticeship and in terms of what your return might be around that. I think there is a kind of broader issue there, I suppose, around what the expectations might be if you, on both sides of the coin, you know, both the employer's expectation of what an apprentice should be able to bring to the table, but also I think in terms of what an apprentice might expect from an employer, I think the style of apprenticeships that you may have seen 20 years ago, if you were going into a garage and one point to do an apprenticeship, I think if you were to treat the apprentice or to have the same expectations of the apprentice to the employer that you would have seen 20 years ago, it's probably a very different ball game nowadays. So I think there's something of a kind of correction there as it goes on both sides of what people expect from the apprenticeship.
Okay, Roland, thanks very much. Once again, thanks for the presentation and the extensive answers for the last hour. And as Charlie had asked, the presentation before, not all members. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks.
Okay. Moving on to item 5, the development of Irish loans. So when you have the report, sir, David, it's a request to add a minor diversion to the public right away to sort of get the development of an agriculture business term and all the sort of matters have been taken care of, and we recommend approval to the request, sir.
I propose to go ahead and also I'll ask the
Moving on to item 6, the Atlantic Area Program, again, John.
Chair, this is a request for the Council to take the lead in an application to the Atlantic Area Program, which would be one of the potentially few remaining opportunities to apply for significant funds to develop cultural heritage offering across the district in partnership with a number of other agents and other partners throughout Europe. The recommendation would be to make the application to go financial institutions in the last year.
Moving on to item 7, international relations.
Yes, sir. The answer to your purchase and related for your attention to the decisions required section. Ignore that part. It's the recommendation to 3.0 for the decisions required. And this is following on from the international relations task and finish group and building on the connections to health care education and our links through the various colleges. So I would recommend the decisions to the committee.
Gary?
Yeah, I'll be on closure. Just one thing I'll just throw into the mixer. Could the committee and the office maybe have a look at involving Newry City Football Club and some of the open up discussion with them in terms of some of the programs around there? You've seen last week Newry City having got up to the Premier League starting and then they got moved from the five seasons from the fifth tier Irish football up to the Premier Division. We now have two local teams in the Premier League picture. And I know, for example, the one Bank Town a number of years ago were involved with our Heroes link. So I just maybe ask the committee to look at are there any options maybe that they have to open up a discussion with the clubs here anyway. And I know the some are approaching their centenary centers involved as well. So just
second up,
so we'll end the next chapter.
Sorry. I'm with Twisdom of Grace and Cody Argentine. Just, I want to get the old bank off of what they've done with Jimmy Johnson 35 years ago or more.
I'm not going to make a way for the dust. Take a proposal and second from Council Island. Any further questions? Okay, happy to move on. Item number 8, the Valley Canal Hospital Project. And Andy.
Yes, Chair, the superseptic plan to develop the Valley Canal Hospital Project at the County Museum. The project has secured 190,000 of European funds through P4 through their shared spaces and building positive relations programmes. The paper sent out options appraisal with a recommendation to create a replica of the hot based on original plans. The committee is asked to consider and improve the business case for the project to allow us to go ahead and secure them. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to propose that we accept the option 3. It is a pity that the main hut and staff was robbed in 2012. I think that's sad. There's not all this time around that basically rebuild it. It also concerns me, are we looking more of the recommendation that the history between 1912 and 1922, is it just be that history inside it, or are we continuing on for like right up to after First and Second World Wars and maybe after that time? If you could give me a wee bit more information on that.
Yep, the main focus will be in those years of, according to the project in order to draw them based on, but there will be elements of the interpretation that will cover the history of the hut right up until present day. So although the main focus is in that period, the interpretation will cover different parts of the timeline for us. Robert?
Yeah,
I understand
that. That's an excellent piece for the state of data. And it's much needed by the museum as well for extra
room
space.
Right.
So just as a support option 3 as well, it is unfortunate that they came, but thankfully the Down Legacy Council did manage to obtain the hut. So we will have the aspects of the original built in, the trust that survived. I think it's a good project, I think it's a good project for building the relationships. It's a shared story, I want to say, in regards to it was an internment camp, and it was also then in regards to World War I as well. You know, so it is a narrative from two perspectives, and I think that's crucial in moving forward.
Just on that, before we move on to the next item, Andy. I get in from the engineering council last night in Galway and decided to read 70 pages of the Ballyclinic Hut. I'm well embarrassed about it, but it was a good idea of any day. But I agree with the comments made by some of the members there, and I seem to know that where the old hut stood, and then it's reached the documents, it was probably more or less about the still outside and some of the columns. It was shocking. One thing I would like to get clarification on is the cost in the council of $65,000 for the interpretation and the use of the hut. What the idea of what that would be. And I know from looking at a few pictures of the huts through Google and that you know, the huts of the 18 foot long, 18 meter plan or whatever, the wooden huts, I suppose all put together the house in World War One, and it was a cheap way of, instead of using tents, the cost of $150,000 or $190,000 seemed extreme for one of the huts back together. But I suppose the EU funding that has to be welcome, but just $65,000 from the council, what's the idea of spending that?
With regards to interpretation of the experience itself, we're looking at utilising virtual reality and augmented reality to tell the story of the hut and the timeline of the people there and those time periods in question. So, and we're looking at working with the you know the likes of the Sheriff Board and other agencies to try and bring that funding forward. So that's essentially what that $65,000 would look at.
Brilliant, Andy. Thanks, Simon. And money well spent on that.
Over.
Are you sort of saying, Andy, then, that it must concentrate between 1912 and 1922 to get the funds, or can we make a proposal of the histories, like, right up to not present day, but obviously, you know, to make sure, I'd just like another to make sure that it's all there doesn't work.
Certainly we can look at that in terms of the timeline up until the present day. Albeit the focus will be in those years, we could look at building the story up until the present day of the overall project.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a proposal in second, so no further questions.
Sure, just
yeah,
on.
Yeah, Willie.
Upton present there, I wasn't as happy with that approach. Obviously, our recent conflict, that, you know, has typically, and I say this as a positive, you know, so I wouldn't like to get into the controversy.
Yeah, thanks, Albert, Willie. Okay, moving on to item 9, which is the notice of motion for the general parliament. Notice of motion in the name of Councillor Gareth Sharon, regarding the council's talk for the Spartacle for the Council.
Yeah, Chair, following the notice of motion presented to April Council by Councillor Sharon, the paper sets out the proposal to improve the St. Patrick's Day cruise in March 2019. So it includes a number of proposals with a focus of development raised in Urien and Patrick. In 2019, there'll be more focus on the areas themselves and opportunity to involve stakeholders from local communities to lead on the development and enhancement of the deliveries themselves as areas. And it's just a note, there'll be more support to encourage local bands to participate in both areas, including £1,500 funding to each band and support for travel, etc. So the paper sets out those proposals for consideration.
Thanks, Andy. Dan?
They did the members to come in and I'm going to propose it. They think it's particularly literal and important to Country Sharon, which unfortunately is here. But it was really concerned from the different people and the local communities that they weren't asked and they put up by the council, because they like a part in trying to change the format of the day and need a more public day, festival day, and that's not the committee prior to that. So, whether Ali saying obvious that those changes could be made together, I'd be happy to support this one.
Thank you. Glenn?
Just on this, I don't know the St. Patrick's Committee since it was created. And to be quite honest with you, I'm surprised that Councillor Sharon actually bring the motion up, because I don't really miss that many of those meetings, and there's a lot of times they ask the young people to turn up for them. The St. Patrick's Committee, they don't really turn up for them, so they don't. You know, there's myself, the whole charter bureau on it as well, and there's Councillor Henry. A lot of the time that those are on the turn up. That was Marie's not the idea of that committee to then to just all this takes a pen from it. If you have a problem with that, you need to turn up meetings. Or if you're representing a group of a turn up, put someone else on. That's just a bit idle.
So there's a lot of ways to do it. I'm not going to say who it is, and he doesn't tend to have that for another day, but then we're all going in the election period, the different people of that happy and the individuals of that happy, and they would like to work more closely with the council and try and arrange and make a different program for that area. Because you must remember, that is the whole of the public.
I'm not arguing that, but your representative is that's what he stops what that person's there for, so they should do that. But just on the balance of that, it has been me that simply just said every single thing there's been an increase in funding towards some sort of house. And as a unionist, I have nothing personal to gain from it because I've never been to any of them things. See how good the ball is going.
Jacob.
In addition to that, you know, on the subject that's what my mind goes, I don't have a small committee, whatever it is. But I did also suggest that I think when we are in the mood for having the aim in this, that maybe we'd start internationalizing a bit more. And, you know, maybe start to invite, you know, some leading, you know, mayors, for example, some of the cities in the US or Canada, as a guest to meet the group. Like, they do that in America and get, you know, thousands of American people to turn up to work. And why can't we do it the opposite way around? So that's what I was suggesting, you know, it's time to start international and put the topic on the map. The way it should be in terms of where St. Patrick's buried in the churches around there, you know.
Right.
It's my suggestion.
Sure, I'm going to speak a bit as well, but I think the committee needs to be aware that the council, chairs and MI, have spent significant sums of money over the last 3 years internationalising the St. Patrick's Day event, with a series of additional events and all as site events to try and make it a bigger festival. That funding has come to an end, so we're going to be as a council focusing very much on our parades moving forward in both Newry and Downpatrick. I'm going to now speak on the business representation and the communities, because we have been continually liaising with them, but we certainly take on board comments, and those asking the table will be looking to announce that.
Yes, Chair, if I could, in previous years, including in 2018, we would have engaged very closely with community groups in order to ensure participation from as wide a selection of people and as wide a number of people as possible, including giving funding to those groups to ensure that they could develop an artistic element of their inclusion in the parade itself. So the new proposals go a bit further and looking at engagement from a very early stage, if this paper is passed, with those groups to see how the overall festival could be shaped and delivered. Charlie?
Yeah, thanks. I just have to agree with what my colleague at the end of the table there was saying, that meetings are only going to be myself and myself, and sometimes Charlie and Philly, when he speaks, he starts going around. I can't even say that they took us down for a meeting on the weekend before the public safety period on a Friday at 5 o'clock to get the OK for the brochure. So at that time, the programme was event, at that time, anybody had an issue with it, they could have been there to try and put them in. But at the village right, I mean, they sent the two of us or three of us to have extended most of those meetings. And the band, the funnel for band has been paid. What do you call them? Yes, it's what the motion? George Sharon suggests we pay them £1,500. Good idea, we're going to get the RTN Boys band back again. Or maybe it's a normal green from Dublin. Who knows? I'm all for that.
Thanks, Charlie.
Michael? Yeah, sure. Just a wee bit concerned with some of the comments we're hearing. So if there was any clause or anything that didn't work right in Suburbic State, we refer it to Charlie and Zane, very sensitive. Well, they were the only ones that had the court for themselves. I'm only listening to the evidence being produced. I think part of the reason Councillor Sharpton brought this was in a genuine attempt to upgrade, if you want, the festival parade in Downpatrick, which this year, maybe because of the weather and all the rest, but wasn't as good as it was in years gone by. Now, if that's to be sorted out by the way, then well, good. We can certainly deliver that. I'm glad to hear that some councillors were involved in the preparation for that particular festival. Because there's a whole lot of festivals, you know, councillors don't be involved in organising committees or don't be consulted, so that's good to hear. But I think what he's saying, he was making a point, I wasn't a data parade, I have to confess, because that's where I went into look, I looked at it on social media. I swear, I have to say, there was not one photograph on our own Facebook page. Mary Moore Down's Facebook page did not have one photograph of either the two festival
parades.
You have to be a friend, I think, to look at your own. I do think that if the Council makes the trouble to bring a motion to Council, it gets diverted from Council to this committee, then maybe it should be given a little bit more shares. So, thank you.
Clarification on the makeup of the Stratton State Scotland.
I think we're coming just after
that. That's Mr. Charlie and Vince.
Yep. And you
would
have better not make a battle. That's right, I suppose, tell us the terms of reference and stuff, who's staring at the name of it. We're not getting into the heavens today, but it's important that any members that are appointed to something attend and bring the local issues to that forum. In regards to, I didn't stay for the parade in that project. I walked and saw the Church of Ireland everything was very enjoyable. There was a lot of people at that, and I think that's a very useful contribution to the day. But the reason I didn't watch, I went to watch a little bit, Aaron Benningham, so that's the reason I wasn't finished there. It was also the green weather as well. It was absolutely crazy. It was snow, you know, so I think we'll have to look at the timing of the event, but also in regards to how do we keep younger children interested. I think we'll have to bear that in mind. And we, in the St. Patrick's Square, there's a range of activities, and they were well attended as well. But there's probably more things we can do really inside and stuff for younger people and stuff. And I think it's about getting the community involved. The community's been at times they've made plenty of suggestions after the event on Facebook or whatever, because I saw a lot of comments that I've probably picked up on. I know Chris Hazard and Emma Rogan were talking about as well, that there was a lot of negativity on Facebook or whatever. And it's about people stepping up to the mark in regards to participating in the parade. There's a lot of time involved in regards to that. I think we have to encourage as many people to get involved. It's for everybody to get involved. It's a people's parade at the end of the day. So we'll have to look at maybe workshops in regards to. There had been a suggestion a number of years ago that we would dedicate an extra £20,000 to choreograph the parade. And that was rejected by councillors, that there would be an independent arts group to come in to choreograph that parade, particularly the Olympic. So why was that rejected? I don't know, but you have to bring new energy into the parade, and to do that you have to have new input brought into the parade as well. You need new ideas, but I think you will get buy-in from people. I think the balance is very good. I think that music brings life to the parade. I think that's essential. A lot of bands, I know Lawstone Band that day, they went south in regards, and part of that's the funding, they collect money on the day. They're also, I think the extra money in regards to that would be beneficial. But in regards, it is a cross-community event, and the Friends of Narrowban, which would come from a news perspective, takes part regularly in the Delphatic Parade. So it's open to all bands in regards to taking part in the parade. But I think we certainly have to look at the parade, the types of I don't know, floats and that. In the parade, we have to, you know, bring, as I said, bring a new energy to the parade. You look at the Derry Halloween parade, for example, and that light that's brought about in regards to that, but also the Dublin parade as well. I know you're talking different comments this year, but we have to just take a new initiative to the parade.
Thanks, Lord. Yeah, sure. It's just make sure that the point is made. In terms of our feedback on the parade, it was a similar number of participants and visitor numbers that came to the parade in both centres this year as they did in previous years. I think they, as we referenced it today, it was really the weather, very, very cold weather conditions, and the fact that there was the Six Nations match on, the fact in particular with the Dun Patrick parade that visitors weren't, it was apparent that there wasn't the same dwell time as in previous years. But coming off the back of this committee, we will circulate in terms of reference of the subgroup, and we'll look to set meeting dates going forward so that we can start the planning early for 2019. And we'll look to really start planning and action this from this summer onwards. So it was a good meeting time for the event in 2019. Thanks, Andy. Brian?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I agree with a lot of what Councillor Clark has said.
Brian, can you switch on the microphone when speaking? Gentlemen, can you switch on the microphone? I'm taking briefly the end of the speakers.
I agree with a lot of what Councillor Clark has said. Some of the bands do the downsize, and it is about the bond. Because down there they were getting €1,000 for a parade, and they can maybe have two or three of the towns down there for a parade. But some of the bands who did stay at home didn't just parade Yuri or Down Patrick. Some of them paraded Yuri and Down Patrick and some of the other towns and villages between those two major parades. And I would like to see us on the council try and encourage when the bands are in the smaller towns like Castle Wannell, Kimfield,
then they get a wee bit of a credit as well. I'm trying to avoid some of the community groups from local towns to put brooks into the rates as well. Because they do sort of enjoy it. And a lot of the older people who can't go to New York down public because they can't get parking because of the congestion, they love to see the parade of those small towns. And I would like to encourage, or the council to encourage up where they can.
Thanks, sir. I definitely agree that those two parades, two events in the public and the area are probably the most important, I think, the area during the year. And you do need a freshness of approach, I think, by people, because I think the parade, the Saturday parades can become a bit stale, unless they are investigated and invigorated with the ideas. Maybe we look at this point here that the temples of the subcommittee would look at that sort of issue, and it isn't more widely supported. But I mean, all the people surely can come in, and if people are interested in supporting the process, they will do that. There is an element of the room design, if aware of, I'm sure other engineers are, I don't know if this comes is in the topic or not, but I mean, there's real on the range drinker problems. When I mean on the age, I do mean on the age. So, I've seen kids 12, 13, 14, you know, really drinking hard and really getting out of their skulls, so to speak. I don't know how you name that as a problem, but it is a major problem. If we have an accident there or something that pertains, something goes badly wrong, you know who's going to get the blame. Just on a more positive note, this kind of, I was on the Greenway on Sunday with Mrs. Beckman, that it's a tremendous, tremendous amount of tourists and events in this area. The number of people who are at it and the number of people participating and walking it and going down to the Victoria Rocks, it's a credit to this council and to the people involved in it. The only one to say about it is the entrance to it in Newry. Some has to be some sort of reason to it. I mean, it's like getting in the wrong place or something. You wouldn't go. There's no way. There's no
safety. No, it's keep comments to the table of the Greenway.
This is a tourism issue. I think it's one that we do, and I think officials do need to look at that issue.
Your comments have been noted. Chairman, did you want to make a brief comment at the end?
Brave, Chairman. I think all the comments that have been mentioned around the country earlier. But last Andy has said now today that he's going to sit down and go and work with all of you and I. These have been very important phrases for us in Newry and the Ben Happy Hill on the Rush today. A lot of you will come to see them together in the band and all this truly support the contribution they make. But now, all right, there was mistakes and the better of but I think we want to move forward. And I think with Andy's time today now, I would ask you to support that through it and that support.
Thanks, Adam. And Dan, have you proposed it? Have we got a second approach?
Hi, Charles.
Okay, we've got the proposal second, so we're going to move on.
What is the policy on tricolours in this on the New England Down Council Parade?
Sure, that's something that we have actually commented on numerous occasions. I can certainly send that out to members again. I don't have to mark forward, so I don't want to be reading it without telling the information from to me. But contrary to what was publicised in the press, there is no banning of tricolours at St Patrick's Day Parade. And I will circulate the policy, and it has been commented on numerous occasions in India.
So does that mean, Chair, that if a unionist band goes to that, they can try the union flag and Ulster flag?
I'm Chair, as I said, I will refer the policy to the members, which very clearly sets out the cross community element of this matter schedule.
Okay, we're going to pause in a second away a long discussion of the items, so we're going to move on to the items for noting. Now, as per usual, we'll be taking at least the first four, one by one. On item 10, Brexit research, and Liam, do you want to say a few words on this item?
Chairman, I'd like to get an agreement actually on this here. It's a piece of research I've been approached by Queen's University to do a piece of work on the impact of Brexit on local communities across the UK, and then they did a referendum, but there's no commitment to ourselves other than that of support to support it. I think it's something that we would find, you know, with a number of universities, Holland, Cardiff and Belfast, actually carrying this research, I think we is going to be involved in. So we've been supportive, but at least we get some idea in terms of what the issues are and what the opportunities are, our risks, and other host communities aren't.
Thanks, Ben. Can I get a proposal for that? Proposed, Councillor Clark, second, Councillor McAteer. So we're moving on to item 11, which is the Southern Relief Road.
Yeah, sure. Members have been provided with the details just in relation to the Southern Relief Road. This is something that the council have previously indicated their support for. There are a number of routes that have been suggested and are being worked through. I would be advising that we'll be sending a letter to the consultation gave us an extensive Friday to allow us to respond to, and I suggest that we send a letter of support again for the Southern Relief Road as per Council's previous discussion.
Thanks, Mary. Gary.
Yeah, I'll be reposing, Chair. Just contacted by some of the user groups in terms of the boats on the canal. Isn't that, can we just ask the question in terms of the different route or the different options? Will they, those, how those options allow, will they allow the current craft that you're able to navigate the canal to a true height? But what are their ramifications? Will the users of the canal be able to continue to use to navigate the canal along the different route options? Sure, just incorporate that.
Yeah, sure. We can certainly do that. The proposed routes have been announced, don't get into the design detail, which is really what that will be addressing, is whether there's a lift and bridge or not, which is what some of the discussion has been around the development of the Southern Road. We can certainly incorporate that on it.
Sure.
I'll
have a second on that. Yeah, I know Marie had said that the council would be sending a letter on behalf of the members here, but just and I know they made a backup note that the email address and contact information is not legible. Mm-hmm. So if we get that sorted, so members can individually obey it with information as well. Declan, do you want to
add? Just on, you know, I'm going to put this for a season. The two options, or the blue option at the time seemed to be the most important, or sorry, the most popular one. And that went for the transport folk and everything. But again, just, you know, I never picked it up when they said yes, the valid point was the old Warren Point Road, and they suggested the linkage there. There was some concern raised about the council's going to the park, so, again, you know, we have to mention that they haven't lost sight of that. And the fact that there was two issues. One was the possible effect that would have on the Gaelic ground there. And the second one is that they did say that they would look at incorporating the junction to come in before their south or south-east towards the old Warren Point Road junction, which was a junction that was causing accidents of concern over the past 10 years. You know, so I want to flag it up as something that we did bring up at the consultation, but it's probably too early for them to get into the details, but not to lose sight of that.
Sure, this was additional to that came up at the consultation, so any points that have been raised by all of the public consultations and indeed the council consultation will have been captured by CNI in certain notes.
Sure.
Yep. So just checking that you send the letter in, but we're not given a preferred option, are we, within that?
and the red and the blue and the green.
No, Chair, we just no touch the board for the
Yeah, thanks.
Just a question for Rick. You see on the Raffles Jerry's remarks on boats coming out of the canal. How many boat movements is there any year there? Because any time I pass it, it's the same boat stuck sitting there for a long way. I'm just asking there because, you know, do they lift them in out by a crane or what? Do they lift them in out? There seems, you know, there's probably a lot of change or anything like that, but it's the same boat.
Sure, and I think that will warrant further discussion at another stage because they dropped the boats and the height of the boats and all the kind of say whether they're going to design, so we can certainly discuss that in some further detail at the end.
Is there
okay, we got a close on time for that. So we're going to move on to the files, which is the minutes of the January meetup and the hearing joint committee report. I'm going to give a proposal time. Proposed definitely on time with President. Okay, and item 13, any business startup program, and again, a proposal time. Proposed then, staff and President. Okay, I'll take item 14 and 15 together. It's the Castleman and Forest Park Task Committee report and the Warren Mine Park Task Committee report. We'll get proposed back to the report.
Proposed
back on the chair and side of the council.
Chair, just you're saying that.
Yeah, sorry. Which item?
The Castleman one?
Yep.
I was in cabinet at that meeting.
Okay, that's gone. And again, the last two I'll take them together, the scheme of delegation and the action plan of update sheet on the proposal back on the report. Proposed Captain Harvey, second of Captain McDale. Yeah, that's the end of the meeting. Say hello.
I'm going to go to the next one.